This is Liquidity Talks, a live stream and podcast series designed to share the latest trends and updates from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk. Join us as we power up the liquidity conversation.
Welcome to our latest installment of Liquidity Talks, live stream and podcast. I'm Neville Roberts, I'm the CEO and founder of Planix, market-leading fintech focused on treasury, risk, and operations. Our topic today comes in two parts. Part one, which is today, is focused on liquidity and it being the lifeblood of your organization. We're going to explore that. And then part two, in a few weeks' time, we're going to discuss what will it take for banks to take liquidity seriously. Today, I am joined by our esteemed guest, Olaf Ransom. Many of you will know Olaf already, but I'm going to give the floor to him to make an introduction to himself and also explain what you do, Olaf.
Hi, thanks very much for having me. I'm also known as the banker's plumber. I help leaders in banks and fintechs master their processing, optimizing things across control, capacity, and cost, and trying to work out where does the old fit in with the new and vice versa. I'm also the liquidity futurologist with the team at Planix, so trying to look ahead to what's coming down the track. And in doing that, understanding a bit of history, you know, where are we? Why do we do what we do or don't do what we do particularly well? I've been doing this stuff for a long, long time, just in thinking about how to introduce myself, long enough that I've settled transactions in French francs and Deutschmarks. And also long enough that I settled Michael Lewis's trades before he went to write books about Sam Bankman-Fried and the eponymous liar's poker of the day. So I've been doing this for a good long while and still finding the opportunities to look at what we do and say, yeah, we could do better.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for that intro, Olaf. I actually remember, I mean, you're talking about pre-2000. When I started my career, I had an eight in it. And I'm not talking about an ace at the end, but thanks very much for that intro. Following on the football theme, Olaf is actually a Liverpool football fan. So given my loyalties, there'll be no hard questions today, Olaf. You don't have to worry about that.
Okay. That's good. Still need some points tonight.
Indeed. The podcast today is going to be based on a blog that we put out on our website and in LinkedIn about 2 weeks ago. So I've posted that in the comment section. So if you click on that at some stage, whether it's now or after the event, you can have a read of that blog and understand the context of this, which is really around why real-time liquidity insights are a game changer for the future of finance. So Olaf, I mentioned at the start, the focus of this podcast is all about liquidity and being the lifeblood of your organization. I guess the obvious point to start is, what do we actually mean by this?
Okay, well, the way to start is that what we do in financial services is actually quite unique in some respects. And that is that we have to interact, all the different players have to interact extensively every day in order to settle trades and make payments. That's an activity that other industries, as best I can tell, really don't have. I sit just down the road from Stuttgart, which is car central up in Germany, Mercedes, Porsche. They don't have to do too much with each other day to day. They might going forward, if we all have autonomous cars, that picture would look a little different. But today, they're not terribly much bothered about what each other is doing. Yet in financial services, we have to do all this interaction every day in order to settle trades and make payments. And the common denominator in everything we do is money, or the means of payment. We need a P to make a straight payment, or a one-way payment, as it's sometimes called. We need a P, as in DVP, delivery versus payment, to settle securities. We need two Ps in PVP, payment versus payment, to settle foreign exchange trade. So it's all about that means of payment and how well we orchestrate it to get through the day. When I look around at what we do in financial services, I think we're reasonably effective. Yes, we do all the regulatory stuff. We get all those payments made every day. We get all the trades settled, but we're far from efficient, particularly on the money side. We really do fragment liquidity. Actually managing money, if you're in a financial institution, is actually an extremely difficult challenge. And some of the people who do it go through quite heroics every day to get it done. And we're making life more complicated. We're adding all these new digital assets, do this, do that. And as I look at this with my liquidity futurologist hat on and the role of Planix on it, geez, this is getting really tough. are we getting beyond our capabilities? I mean, it's capabilities that are the central theme of things intraday and real time.
So liquidity, I guess, it's like health, right? So you have to take it seriously. And I get the concept of liquidity. It's like blood. So it's flowing through your system. You're continually moving things around, but you don't always think about what the problems could be. But so why should I worry? Why should I care? Do I take it for granted?
Lots of people do. I think it's something like the annual health check. And people do the annual health check, tick in the box. Dental hygienist once a year, you know, tick in the box. And then it's a necessary evil. You do it and then you worry about it, you know, only the next time. But really, it's about more than the numbers in a box. It's the compounding of things that might hurt you. So you need to be very fit and have all your capabilities working. I think I'd pick a few examples from the recent past. So lots of people know that Silicon Valley Bank, SVB, collapsed. Not everybody knows that one of its close cousins, Signature Bank, also collapsed. Signature Bank, they're heavily involved with the fintech center, businesses banking them. And at some point, just after SVB, Silicon Valley Bank had been closed down, Signature managed to overdraw their account at the Fed, which is the real-time gross payment system in the US, because they use something called a debit cap. Basically, it's a permitted overdraft. And the Fed guys were monitoring this in real time. And they called up Signature and said, "Do you guys know when you're going to be back in the black?" to coin the phrase. And apparently the answer was, "Oh, we don't really know." And the Fed listened to that and went, "In that case, we're closing you right down. We're worried enough and we're just going to close you down right now." Basically there, you could see that Signature's capabilities were kind of inadequate. Quite likely, they had some wonderful LCR numbers and liquidity coverage ratio and these NSFR and net stable funding ratios, all these must-do things which we have to have. But when the rubber hit the road, they couldn't answer the question about how they were doing now in real time. And that, for them, ultimately meant death because they were closed down. Nearer to home, at least in terms of all of those of us in Europe, about a year ago, the good old UK pension fund industry had what I think we might term a near-death experience. There were some unfortunate decisions made by the government of the day, and we should perhaps leave it at that. And depending on market's view of government decisions, this has an impact on government bonds in whatever country it is. In the UK, it had quite an impact, thank you very much. The prices of gilts, UK government bonds, collapsed massively. And it turned out that many of the pension funds got, I think the expression will be, sideswiped by this. And the way to think about it is almost certainly 95% of the people on this call will have a defined benefit pension. Very few of us have got a defined, they have a defined contribution pension. Very few will have a defined benefit. Those have gone by the wayside. But when you finally decide to take that pension, somebody's got to manage it. And those pensions are all managed by a specific niche of the pension business called LDI. It's just, now I forget exactly what the abbreviation stands for. Should know off the top of my head, but don't. And those funds, because of the change in the gilt prices, got a lot of margin calls because they have to have some derivatives. And when those margin calls came, they had a bit of a problem because they didn't have any cash to make the margin calls. And really, there's only three ways you can make those calls. One is you've got cash. The other is you borrow some money against something, which we call repurchase agreements or securities financing. It's different ways. Or you sell stuff. But of course, if you sell stuff, you exacerbate the thing that has just caused all those calls. And it turned out that the UK pension funds, their capabilities weren't good enough to take all that inventory and so-called put it out on the street in a repo or financing transaction. So they had to sell. And the Bank of England then had to step in because this was a vicious circle. Now, that was near death, but underneath it was an issue of capabilities, this ability to get all the things done on the day when the wind blows, as opposed to, you know, when the sun is out in there. Now, remember, LDI, liability-driven investment. Don't know why that didn't occur to me. The final example, and one out of three ain't bad in this case, this is one closer to home for all of us. When Credit Suisse was collapsing, one of the Planet clients, who's a G-SIB in Europe, and we'll leave it at that, they were actually using what Planet does to do exactly these things of being able to measure in real time. And they were able to keep the exec board and the supervisory board board of directors informed in pretty much real time that, yep, we can see what's happening. This is what it is. We can see money moving, not moving, money coming in. We've got the live status. And they survived quite well, thank you very much, in this. And you could see there the contrast between I've got the right capabilities over and above whatever I do on regulatory reporting and ticking boxes and filling stuff in and sending things to the regulator once a month versus those who didn't have them, whether it's the pension funds or those guys in the States. And I think that's what I think about when it's sort of like health. It's no good having a health report from 2 weeks ago. That's great. Won't save you.
Yeah, so well.
It's about what's right now. And as we talk about the capabilities, I think there's a few related parts to that. One is, if you know you've got the capabilities, you can be more confident. Not confident, yes, we have filed the report as per the directions, but confident if the wind blows, you know, we can deal with it and we're resilient. We can do these things, do what we need to do to get through the day. But you can also choose to do that. And I know we often focus on the sell side, which have to do many of these things. But in all of this, there's a choice. Having a good process, having the right tools, you can make that choice whether you're the sell side, different players on the buy side, from asset managers to hedge funds, to life insurance companies, or even corporates.
Yep.
Capabilities so, are choice.
So Olaf, you talk about death, near death, surviving death, but really you want to be alive and kicking and healthy. So really it's about, you know, you can't take health for granted. You got to evolve. You got to have those constant checkups and take corrective action when you have to. You don't have to wait for a year. One quote I actually heard, which I think is true, I'll get you, is that the 100% of failed banks, all banks failed because of lack of liquidity. Ultimately, that was the reason. Is that?
Yes. I think that's fair. I think there are other problems.
Yep.
In the end, though, it's that lack of liquidity that kills them, and that lack of ability to respond. I can think of the same thing on the health part. Many, many years ago, my father had cancer, had an operation. In the end, it wasn't the cancer that killed him. He had a follow-up something or other. There was an infection, and his body wasn't strong enough. His body wasn't healthy enough to deal with all of those things. And there's a theme around that, I think, in what we've seen. And liquidity is the final thing that gets everybody. Look, as long ago as 2008, Lehman had a liquidity issue, ultimately, that sent them under. I think in the more recent cases as well, you've seen more of a run on the bank type exercise. And those are very, very hard to survive. Even, you know, you can possibly delay them. I think what we have seen with that liquidity thing, both in the Credit Suisse case and the Silicon Valley case, is that the speed at which stuff happens is so fast. And when we were at uni studying whatever we did, and we get some economics and people talk about runs on the bank, now they'll show you a picture of people queuing up in front of the bank, or even as long ago as Northern Rock in, what was it, 2008, lines of people in front of the bank. It's not that anymore. Yeah. All high-tech, online, heard a rumor, boom, 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 send my money. And rational doesn't even apply. I think if I thought about what happened when the CS thing was news, I was just looking at it going, look, I know my business has got balance at Credit Suisse. I know I'm protected for the first 100 grand, but I don't want my money locked up. So a 100 grand insurance limit played no role at all. I just went, ding, send money somewhere else. And all the money's going out, and that happens quicker and quicker. So we can see, you know, what's new is social media, complete amplifier that's making things happen far faster than we've ever had in the past.
Exactly. Olaf, we've had a question from Nicola, who we all know well. Hi, Nicola. You mentioned examples of black swan event stress scenarios, which we also talked about last time, where it's important to have a view of intraday liquidity. He believes that there's a strong case to support better the view of intraday liquidity and business as usual. So, you know, business as usual versus stress. Can you comment on that?
Yeah. So here's a way of looking at this. So clearly at the very top of our organizations, our general management, our board directors, they know they have to do all these regulatory things like liquidity coverage ratio, stable funding ratio, leverage ratio. And there's a bunch of formal processes that mean they get, the CFO does this stuff. The CFO informs the general management informs the board. And there's all this measuring. There's the same measuring in most countries on intraday liquidity. And all of that comes from, I think that happened in 2013 from guys in Basel called Monitoring Tools for Intraday Liquidity, BCBS 248. And they're very simple with their titles. And 248, I think, fantastic in a number of dimensions, but it's also potentially tricky. It actually includes things on reporting, on stress testing, and on capabilities. So it says, we want you to report on how much credit you took, how much credit you gave. And that feels a bit like the front page of the exam question paper. How many times have we done an exam, whether it's at uni or at school, and we didn't turn the paper over and there's stuff on the other side? I think stuff that's on the other side, whether it's the stress testing or the capabilities, are more important than the front side of the exam question. Because by the time you fill in that report at the end of the month and send it back, you know, on average, you know, the three largest exposures will blah. There's a so what to that. But actually having the capabilities to measure things in real time. And I was actually looking at this yesterday for an article I was putting together. You go back to 2013 and look at those recommendations from the BCBS, which then trickle down to national regulations. They're very good principles. Those principles said, here are the capabilities you should have to measure intraday status across your business. And you look back 10 years on and go, pretty good. I think as well, a measure of how good they are is that after the pensions mess, the policy committee of the Bank of England, they weren't going to let this one just go uncommented. They sent some notes to, let's just call them the buy side, and said, hey, you know, take note. We weren't terribly impressed by your capabilities. I'm sure they use much nicer words than that. And amongst the things that they sent to the buy side was a pointer to BCBS 248. They didn't say it was 248 deliberately, because otherwise everyone would jump up and down and go, we're not a bank.
We're not a bank.
Yet, yeah, all of you, you're right. You're not banks, but you could choose to follow those capabilities. So I think to Nicholas's point here about the case for paying more attention, this has got to be on the agenda from the top. This is tone gets set from the top down. It's very, very difficult in an operational context to get people above your head to pay attention, to give you the money to have better tools and all the rest. And in fact, invariably, they don't give you any of that until something's blown up. I once lost $2 million of Goldman Sachs Partners money many years ago on a mess with a reorg, after which they happily invested in fixing some of the problems with the reorg system. Personally,
it was you.
Yeah, personally, I'd rather not have lost the $2 million for the partners in the meantime, because they did explain in excruciating detail how much money that was. That was a very painful incident. But it's difficult to get this focus on operational stuff. Invariably, at the top of the organization, we're focused on the amount of daylight between revenues and costs, and not on the components of the costs and things that make all those capabilities. As we've been talking around the firm and different clients, the utmost important for us is to get that higher level visibility, because people need to invest in these capabilities, and you're only going to get that from the top. Somebody says, yep, I may not have to do this. And for example, if you're on the buy side, you don't have to do this. If you're in South Africa, where even if you're a bank in South Africa, where the central bank hasn't yet enforced all those BCBS 248 guidelines, you don't have to, but you could. You could make a choice. So there's work to be done, Nicholas, your job at NABC, to let your execs know that this stuff matters. And Neville's point, all the failures all come down to liquidity.
Agree.
And you need those better tools.
I know, Laf. Yeah, we talk a lot about banks, but you know, we've talked about pension funds, we've talked about buy side, but non-banks, they must have the same issues, and they in some way they contribute towards this. I mean, well, you said that they could, but they really should take notice of that. And whilst it was a pointer, it should be taken a bit more seriously than that.
Yep. You've seen now as well, there's some other follow-up. There's the Bank of England doing a system-wide enterprise test that they're calling it, saying, people, how do you show us how resilient you are? I think you're slowly seeing, not necessarily by diktat of a new rule, but by regulators at Bank of England going on saying, actually, because we can, we're going to ask you to show us how you would do X or Y, or explain how you do Z and stress testing. And that, of course, then it forces you to make an effort. Now, could be that the CFO gets that task and just shouts at one of the junior weeks and says, get all of this stuff. And he's not overly bothered by how many late hours that the junior week had to spend to pull everything together. But slowly that increases the heat as people realize that you're going to get asked these questions. And then you see your answers relative to your peers. Clearly not everybody's named in these reports at all, but there are, you know, the report goes round and you're like, oh, that's what everybody else is doing, you know, on average better than I'm doing. So some of that helps. And we must hope that in that some folk realize that it's time to make that choice to put in better tools, because working those things out is very painful.
If we think about the rules of the game here and whether they changed or not, because I'm not sure they have. So we understand financial services, they connect, they move cash securities around, the recent events happened. But what's new? Because money moves, margin calls happen, regs are in place. But what's changed if you go all the way back to like probably 2013 and these things are still happening?
I think what's changed is some of the environment. So we commented on the speed at which money moved out of Silicon Valley Bank and at Credit Suisse, that just happened far faster than it's ever happened.
Yeah.
I think you're also seeing some changes which are going to put pressure on you. The one that I would pick here to highlight is this so-called T+1, settlement today plus one. That's probably net good, I would say, because if you compress settlement periods, you have less capital locked up in something called counterpart and credit risk. But it puts a lot of pressure on funding, particularly if you're not dollar-based. If you're in Texas and you're buying mutual funds in the US, your equities, great. That will all be fine. If you're in New Zealand and you're a fund manager based in Kiwi dollars and you've got 20% of your portfolio in US equities, what you used to do today, Thursday, for the trades you did on Wednesday, for the money you needed to settle tomorrow, Friday, now just got compacted. By the time you come in on Friday morning, tomorrow in New Zealand, the trades you did on Thursday are going to settle later. That's changing what you need to do. Now, imagine that Kiwi fund manager right now, there's not much on the horizon other than ringing the custodian. Mate, you're going to be good for that. Now, can you lend me some dollars? And of course, the custodian probably will, because the custodian's sitting on all those US equities, so they've got some collateral. That's good. Secured lending is always better than unsecured lending. And they'll charge some fees for that. And the fees, in the end, will dampen the performance of the funds. The dampening of the performance of the funds, in the end, trickles down to, you know, the ordinary investor, whether it's their pension fund or the mutual fund they own, which is less good. So we've got to get better at doing these things. We need better infrastructure. We can see some of the way there in matters digital with what can happen there. And that's another thing that's coming in there. So the pressures are much higher. There's a lot more activity. It's all happening faster. Your instant payment schemes as well. So I think that's what's changing. And of course, any one of those things you can manage. But once you start to pile them all up, it's like, wow, you know, this is actually quite difficult. The job of being that ops person who does, some places call it cash management, some places call it funding, settlements, whatever. That is a very hard job to do. And people at the coalface who do those jobs deserve to have the right tools for the job.
Exactly. Exactly. So look, time for one last question. And I met up with Colm Kelleher about 3 months ago, chairman of UBS. And when I was asking about this and the merger with or takeover of Credit Suisse, he said a lot of these issues and challenges come from bank culture. He said he doesn't think that's right, and you need to start with that. Your view on that, do you agree?
Yep, I think that comes back to where Nicholas led us in on this about better support. I think part of the culture problem is sort of front versus back, and it's always hard if you're in the so-called back office in operations or support functions, whichever label people put it. It's very, very hard to get attention to these things. Yet, when we talk about the tools that we provide to the clients of Planix, they're about control. They're about giving those businesses control. And if you've got control, you've got capacity. If you've got the right tools, you can do more and you can respond. and that has its influence on cost. So if I was to bump into Mr. Keller at the James Joyce here in Zurich, which is probably where you'd find him, apparently they're there and he's an Irishman, I would be making a plea for the plumbers, saying, hey, you know, culturally, we need to give more support to all those operations, those support functions, because it's that that enables you to get through the day, to do that settlement, to do those payments, and to organize the liquidity to get through the day.
Got it. Well, look, thanks very much, Olaf. We're running out of time, unfortunately. You can talk for this for many, many hours. Hopefully that gives you, you know, some insight into why liquidity is the lifeblood of a bank and your organization. That concludes our latest liquidity live stream and podcast. Olaf made a point around guidance principles. They're still sound and they have been for some time. So in our next podcast, we're going to explore, you know, why do banks still not take them seriously? Some do, some do not. And we'll talk about that in more detail next time. So thank you very much. My name is Neville Roberts. Thank you for tuning in and goodbye.
Goodbye.
You've been listening to Liquidity Talks. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on the latest developments and industry opinion from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk.